Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 12th perek of Sefer Melachim Aleph. Today is a very tragic perek. It is really the title of this section is the split of the kingdom. What has been such an idyllic and beautiful time, an apex that we've been working towards, now turns unfortunately sour. So this is where it all happens. So Shlomo has passed away, and his son Rechavam now takes the seat of power. And it is literally at this point in time, he goes to the city of Shechem to establish his power, and the people make a request of him. And they say to him, and they are now joined with Yerovam, who remember has been in exile because of being banished by Shlomo to Egypt, and he joins the people's request. And the request is, please lower the taxes. The taxes your father put, whether it be the people's tax, whether it be the gold tax that your father had, are just too high. Please lower them. So he requested, Rechavam prudently requested 3 days to discuss it with his advisors. And so it was. So Shlomo first turns to his advisors, and the Zakenim, the elders who were his advisors, said, you know what? If you serve your people, im hayom tihye eved la'am, if you're going to be a servant leader, what's called servant leadership today, it's actually a type of leadership, there's books written on this, then, in that case, and you speak to them in a nice way, you'll have buy-in, they'll be your servants. So ironically, meaning counterintuitively, if you're nice to them, if you're less harsh on them, they will be more bought into you. However, Rechavam did not listen to them. He listened to what the Tanakh calls us the Atzas Yelodim of the children, which means the younger advisors. And they said, no, if your father made it difficult for them, make it even more tough. Be tough on them. Show them tough love, and that's how you'll get governance. That's how you'll get buy-in. And Shlomo Melech and Rechavam listened to the young ones. He did not listen to the elders. He brings back the answer after 3 days. Yerovam and the representation come in, and he says, "No, my father made it difficult for you. My father made it difficult. I'm going to make it even worse for you. I'm going to make it really tough for you." And the Tanakh goes out of its way to tell us that this was the reason why he did this was because Siba Me'im Hashem. It was the reason Hashem was facilitating this decision, that he made the mistake to facilitate the prophecy that was made by Achia Shiloni in the previous parak to split the kingdom. What happens? Israel saw that this king clearly does not get them. He's not on the same page, and they said, "You know, we're not paying. We don't need this. They all go home. They don't pay tax." And the only tribe that really adheres to Rechavam is the tribe of Yehuda, and of course Binyamin implicitly. Rechavam seems to not really get this, because he sends over his tax collector, his name was Adoram, to go collect the taxes. And what happens? He gets killed. They kill him on his job. And then Rechavam realizes this: the rebellion has happened. And at this point in time, he runs in his chariot, flees to Jerusalem for safety. And in Jerusalem, he starts creating an army. So he conscripts a huge army to now go enforce the tax issue. And we're told that between Yehuda and Binyamin, we have 180,000 soldiers ready for war. And you're about to witness another civil war in Israel. However, they're interrupted by a prophet whose name is Shemaiah, who's called Isha Elohim. And he comes and he says to them, don't do this. Loi ta'alu, don't go up and don't fight, because this was from Hashem. And they desist and everybody returns to their home. At this point in time, we move the camera northwards to Yerovam. Yerovam is now appointed as the king in Shechem over the northern tribes, the 10 tribes of Israel. And what he does is, the first thing he does is he realizes that people are going to now still make a pilgrimage down to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they will still be in line with Rechavam's kingship. So what he does is he does a very curious thing. He makes two Eglei Zahav, two golden calves. One he places in Beis El in the south, and one he places in Dun in the very north. And he makes he starts putting out altars across Bamos, across the area, and the priests, and they start sacrificing. And in fact, he starts making this chag on the middle of the 8th month, the 15th of the 8th month, which is, of course, Cheshvan. And he makes this festival, which people would celebrate on a year-to-year basis, and creating out, really, Bodomili Boy, the Tanakh tells it. He sucked it out of his thumb. This was completely from nothing beforehand. And this is where we were left. Now, it was a really troubling parak on many fronts. Let's just try to analyze one or two points before stopping today. One point is, why Shechem? Why symbolically did this happen in Shechem. So Rashi on the Torah and Rabbeinu Bechaye on the Torah all point this out in Perek Bereshis, Perek Lamed Zayim, which of course is the chapter dealing with the rape of Dina. And they quote a Chazal which says that Shechem is a makom mezuman leparonus. It's a place which a lot of difficult things happen. Number one, Dina's rape occurs there. Number two, that's where the tribes sell, the brothers sold Yosef. And number three, this is where the Malchus splits in Shechem. If you think about this, Rabbi Foreman actually has a beautiful shir on this in regards to Megillas Esther, and he points out that each of these three incidents actually relates to a friction between the children of Rachel and the children of Leah. If you think about it, the rape of Dina was when HaChazonaya implicitly what the B'nai Leah are saying is it just because she's a child of Leah that Yaakov, you are quiet and you do not take revenge? What happens if she was a child of Rachel? Would you have done something else? Already the tensions of the two families felt. Of course, the selling of Yosef is just where that comes to complete expression. And now we see the north-south, Yerovam from Yosef and Rechavam from Yehuda, the north-south, Ephraim and Yehuda split once again. What's really going on here when looking at this this thing was Yerovam leading this cause? Was this a pretext? How did it really work? So most of the Mefarshim understand that people were happy to pay tax when they felt secure. When they felt that there was national security, then everybody was all right with taxes. They might be a little high, but Shlomo was really an icon. Now, Rechavam is not the same icon. People aren't coming to take pictures of the palace guards and take a look at Rechavam's palace the same way they were with Shlomo. And number two is they didn't feel security. We can already see at the end of the last perek that there's tensions on the northern borders and there's tension on the southern borders between Edom and Hadad Ezer, the children of the survivors who go from this kingdom, and they're not so happy. So they say, well, this doesn't make sense. Economically, it doesn't make sense. Yerovam is finding this, most of the Mefarshim say, as a pretext. He jumps on the bandwagon of discontent and he makes it himself the leader. We see this many times where you see people who have economic or real concerns and then you have a leader who takes over the march, who takes over the thing and adds a special ribbon as if it was really his thing, but it wasn't his thing. This is what Yerovam seems to be doing over here. So just one or two other things over here which is just worthwhile looking at is you kind of think to yourself, does Rechavam not see the writing on the wall? Why is he sending his tax collector out? But apparently the blindness was, he was so blind to the understanding of where the people were at. He really didn't understand how much they were suffering economically. He really didn't get it. And that's why he even sends his tax master out, even though he was just rejected. And it took his tax collector to be killed for him to really understand the gravity of the situation. That's how disconnected he was. The leader was too far, too much in the ivory tower to be able to understand his own people. When looking at this over here, just wanted to do two more points really over here. And that is this I just want to put out there, and just this is something we really need to digest, something we really need to think about is, what does Hashem really want? Meaning, does Hashem want it to be two kingdoms? It sounds like the prophet Shemaya, or this Ish Elohim, says yes. He says, don't fight them, because this was Hashem's Hashkocha. But Hashem's Hashkocha led to Eglei Zahav. So like, what does Hashem really want over here? He wanted to punish Shlomo, and hence Rechavam, and Rechavam's actions. But the punishment was, in a certain sense, self-destructing. So was Hashem leaving it up to a human's choice? But then he is in a certain sense stifling the choice to break and by breaking this civil war, which would have quelled the rebellion potentially. Very difficult. What was the plan over here? How much is it in our hands? How much is it not in our hands at this point? Is something really worth trying to really boil through. Now, last thing just to think about over here is, if you were to summarize the entire Torah and say there's the most important lesson you learn from all of the five books of Moses, and that is please don't make golden calves. I mean, like, that should be like number three or two or maybe even one on the list. Don't make golden calves. Didn't work out well the first time. So what in the world is he doing? A golden calf, like, use something else, I don't know, make a signpost, but a golden calf? So it seems like the Mefarshim really debate this. Was this Avodah Zarah or was it not Avodah Zarah? The Ma'ari Kra, one of the earlier Rishonim, says, you know what it was? The calf represents Bechor Sharai, the representation of Yosef. When you see the stained glass in shuls, usually the cow or the bull is Yosef. So it represents Yosef. It's a sort of a mascot. But why was he doing this? Ultimately, the Ma'ari Kra says that it was intended for a good purpose, but it turned out wrong. It turned out to lead to Avodah Zarah, much like the Mefarshim say, by the Egels of itself. Somehow history repeats itself when people try their own ways, but they don't have the directions. They think it's good, they think it's meaningful, they think it resonates, but they don't have the instruction manual from God. So they're missing the point, and then it ends up with Avodah Zarah ultimately. Last point just to take away from this parak is, why did he make this festival in Cheshvan? Well, clearly he's trying to move away from the Tishrei festival cycle of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Kippur and Sukkot, which were clearly based on Mikdash centric. But what about Cheshvan? Like, why then? So the Chidah points out that that's the full end of the agricultural season. Meaning in Tishrei, there's still some collections. But as we know, October, the apples and the pumpkins, depending where you are and which part of the world, it definitely wasn't like that way I was growing up. But whichever part of the world you're in, that's the full finishing of that agricultural festival, and that's why he did it as a full summation. So he's using the agricultural cycle and also differentiating his people from the rest. What is clear in the mind of Yerovam over here is an understanding, an uncanny understanding that people need religion, people need ritual, and if they're going to have if they can't get the ritual they need, he's going to recreate his own ritual to be able to create the cult which separates them from the real one. In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.